We are now ready to begin the jury charge portion of the RPR examination, which is 5 minutes of dictation at 200 words per minute. Ready? Begin. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we are at the stage where, under the law, I have to read the instructions to you. If you will, please follow along with me on the first page. These are the instructions that you must follow in your deliberations in this particular matter. Members of the jury, in any jury trial, there are, in effect, two judges. I am one of the judges, the other is the jury. It is my duty to preside over the trial and to decide what evidence is proper for you to consider. It is also my duty at the conclusion of the trial to explain to you the rules of law that you must follow and apply in arriving at your verdict. First, I will give you some general instructions which apply in every case. For example, instructions about burden of proof and how to judge the credibility of witnesses. Then I will give you some rules of law which apply in this specific case. And after that, I will explain to you the procedures that you should follow in your deliberations. You, as jurors, are the judges of the facts. But keep in mind that in determining what really happened, that is, in reaching your decision as to the facts, it is your sworn duty to follow all of the rules of law as I explain them to you. You have no right to disregard or give special attention to any one instruction or question the wisdom or correctness of any rule I may give you. You must not substitute anything nor follow your own notion or opinion as to what the law is or ought to be. It is your duty to apply the law as I explain it to you, regardless of the consequences. It is also your duty to base your verdict solely on the evidence, free from prejudice or sympathy. That was what you swore to do in the oath you took before being accepted by the parties as jurors, and they have the right to expect nothing less. The indictment or formal charge against the defendant is not evidence of guilt. In fact, the defendant is presumed by the law to be innocent. The law does not require a defendant to prove he is not guilty, nor to produce any evidence in the case at all. The state has the burden of proving the defendant is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt, and if it fails to do so, you must find him not guilty. While the state's burden of proof is a strict or a heavy burden, it is not necessary that a defendant's guilt be proved beyond all possible doubt. It is only required that the state's proof exclude all reasonable doubt as to the defendant's guilt. A reasonable doubt is a doubt that is based on reason and common sense, and one that remains after a full and impartial review of all of the evidence in the case. Proof beyond a reasonable doubt, therefore, is proof of such a convincing sort that you would be willing to rely and act upon it in the most important of your own affairs. As I told you before, it is your duty to determine the facts. In doing so, you must consider only the evidence presented in the trial, which means the sworn testimony of the witnesses and the exhibits that were marked. Keep in mind that statements made by the lawyers are not evidence. The function of the lawyers is to point out those things that are most important or most helpful to their side of the case, and in so doing, call to your mind certain facts or inferences that might otherwise escape your notice. But in the end, it is your own recollection and interpretation of the evidence that controls in the case. What the lawyers say is not binding on you. During the course of the trial, I sustained objections that were made to some questions and exhibits. You must disregard each of those questions and exhibits entirely. Do not speculate as to what the witness may have said if he had been allowed to respond to the question, nor as to what may have been contained in some of those exhibits. You may not engage in such speculation. It is also the case that certain testimony or other evidence was ordered by me to be stricken from the record during the course of the trial. You have been told that you must disregard all of this evidence. You may not consider it in any way in reaching your verdict. Your verdict must be based solely on evidence that is admissible. I want to caution you that you should not assume from anything I may have said or done during the trial that I have any opinion concerning any of the issues in this matter. Except for the instructions to you on the law, you should disregard anything I may have said during the trial in arriving at your own findings as to the facts. While you should look only to that evidence which is entered before you in reaching your verdict in this case, you may draw any conclusions from the evidence as reason and common sense tell you are justified in light of your own past experience. Keep in mind as you decide the facts in this case that you should not be concerned as to whether the evidence that you have before you is direct or it is circumstantial. Direct evidence is testimony of one who has firsthand knowledge of a fact, such as a person who saw something or heard something, that he can swear to under oath. On the other hand, circumstantial evidence is proof of facts and a chain of events which may lead you to conclude that the defendant is either guilty or not guilty. You must keep in mind the law gives the same weight to circumstantial and direct evidence.